I'll try anything twice. Once to see if I like it, and twice to make sure I hate it.
You know, trying different ranges. Like, I thought I didn't like chocolate up until I was 26.
I didn't realize I was that easy to read, but I feel like I'm really drawn to, like, deep, nutty, rich flavors.
Very classic. Yeah. It's like cream and cherries and chocolate.
Hello and welcome back to Kitchen Tape. I'm Cassie Mendieta.
And I'm Rose Wild. And today we're going to be talking about flavor combinations.
Which is probably like what we're really known for is the way we decorate cakes, but also like the flavor combinations that we come up with. Like, I feel like that's what I get asked about the most.
Is how you come up with your flavor combinations.
Is like in the comments, my DMs, people are like, how are you doing that? And I'm like, what do you mean how? Just kind of happens. It's like effortless. It's no big deal.
Maybe it was born like, this way.
I woke up and I did it.
But truthfully, though, it is a language that you begin to speak more as you become more adventurous and creative, trial, error, failures, and then start to trust your own palate.
Definitely. And a lot of it draws from like nostalgia for me. Like a lot of my flavors are nostalgic in some way. It's never like, oh, this is exactly like peanut butter and jelly, but it's like reminiscent of that is kind of what I try to play into when I'm like coming up with flavors, where it's not just so like in your face that this is meant to be nostalgic, but then you eat it and you're like, oh, this kind of does taste like peanut butter and jelly. And I'm like, well, it's black sesame and this and that. And it's like, it's hitting those same like flavor notes where it's like, it's nutty and then we have something fruity, but it's not just like, you know, PB&J.
Yeah, it's not an exact lift. Yeah, I think we're playing on these ideas of nostalgia and you're abstracting flavor to like more basic components than just the ingredient you remember. You know, I think about things like vanilla and chocolate cake, which are never going out of style, which we had when we were younger. But when I make a vanilla cake now, I'm almost always like quadrupling the vanilla.
Oh, yeah.
Because I want it to be worthwhile and a flavor that you
we
taste.
Measure vanilla with our heart.
Yes.
And
we poured
almost
from the hip.
Always.
There's a lot of love in the heart for vanilla. Yeah, because I feel like when we grew up, vanilla was like plain.
Yeah.
It wasn't celebrated as something in itself.
Yeah, and I think when people think things like vanilla, they're like, oh, that's so basic and plain. And like when people are asking me like, oh, how are you coming up with like these crazy flavor combinations? Like, I'm such a basic girl. I just love vanilla. And I'm like, there's nothing basic about vanilla.
No.
When you're getting that like very floral, like decadent flavor from it. There's nothing basic about that.
Yeah. And I think also people, just to give a little botanical information, people may not realize that like it takes like a 12 to 16 foot tree to produce like 4 or 5 pods of vanilla. And those flowers have to be sexed with each other by hand because there's not enough of the insects that feed off of them. So vanilla is a small miracle that has like a lot of hands delicately handling it from the beginning. And I think that if you go to the base of any ingredient, you'll find maybe not such an extreme story, but some sort of veneration that for me has led me to take a lot of things that I expect to be maybe basic or plain. Like, I think you could make the same argument for like clove, cinnamon, nutmeg being combined together. But if you use really good cloves,
really good cinnamon,
look at the 5 different kinds of cinnamon, find which one you really like, use mace as well as nutmeg, then you start to have more robust flavors. So I think that's one way also to sort of approach kind of stepping up your flavors if you feel like what you're doing is basic quote unquote.
Well, I'm curious, what's your, like, favorite go-to flavor combination right now? Because I feel like at least for me, it's always changing what is my, like, go-to, my
Yeah, I mean, you and I both work pretty seasonally, so I think that mine always changes quite a bit. And, like, if I discover a new ingredient, like, I can become pretty obsessive about something and kind of
put it in. That's the ADHD.
Is it?
Yeah, because I'm the same way.
I'm like, I'm going to put in seven different things. I think it more is being extremely scientific and trying to, like, tease out nuances. But, you know, I think both are brilliant approaches. Yeah, so I think that it's always evolving. But, I mean, an all-time favorite flavor combination for me is some sort of variation of cream and berries.
Yeah.
So that can mean literally heavy cream whipped, sweetened a little, or condensed milk, or even evaporated milk. Or today I made some muscovado milk and boiled it down for a little while. So I think, again, like, thinking about the variations within something you love automatically will make something, like, more unique.
Yeah.
You know? And so, like, now, just referencing vanilla again, like, I'll use sweet woodruff, which is
delicious.
Yeah, it's this crawling herb that tastes almost exactly like vanilla, but it has this,
like hay.
Fresher vegetal hay. Totally. I was first introduced to it by Anna Posey of Elski Restaurant. She sent me a bunch because she was growing it. So I think it's stuff like that, you know, where even for me, I'm like, oh, this reminds me of something I had when I was younger, so now I'm into it.
Yeah.
What about you? What are the things you're sort of finding yourself into right now?
So when I was working at Mr. Holmes doing, like, flavor development for them, I would come up to my friend Marissa and I'd be like, oh, try this, and she'd ask me, like, oh, what is it? And I'd start to explain it, and she'd stop me and go, let me guess, there's brown butter miso and malted milk powder in it. And I was like,
is that your, like, trinity?
That's my trinity. That's like, I was like, wow, I didn't realize I was that easy to read. But I feel like I'm really drawn to, like, deep, nutty, rich flavors, but also things that are very, very playful, like banana Nesquik.
Yeah,
I love artificial
banana.
You do banana.
A lot of great high-low stuff. I really like the recent Swiss Miss chocolate glaze.
And that's also just, like, you have this set of experiences when you're a kid, and, like, my mom was never giving me anything more than, like, Nesquik powder and, like, peanut butter and jellies. But then I, you know, went on and lived my own life and worked in all these restaurants where you're, like, exposed to new ingredients. And walking into the first professional kitchen I ever worked in, I was like, what the heck is a currant? What is this? And, like, you grow through that and you learn through that. And so it's, I think that's a big part of finding your voice, is, like, leaving where you're from to, like, experience new things.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think professionally or just, like, visiting the market, if you don't recognize something, don't be shy to ask the farmer, like, what it is, what they use it for, and then just do a little research is, like, definitely a great way to, like, expand your horizons, because you can't pair flavors in your head that you haven't,
that,
like,
you've never tried
before.
Yeah. And I have this saying that I, or, like, in my head, where, like, I'll try anything twice, once to see if I like it and twice to make sure I hate it. And so that's, like, how I'm trying new things. I'm like, I want to, like, learn and like more. And, like, if you try a flavor once and it's not something you like, it's probably just that iteration or, like, that preparation of it that you're not liking. So maybe try it again a little down the line as something else, and maybe you'll find that you, like, do like it, and it'll still open you up, like,
I'm curious where you came to this saying for yourself.
It wasn't through food.
Okay, well, I was gonna say the reason I think it's interesting is because, like, when I was designing the flavor wheel for my book Bread and Roses, I came across a study that, like, they did with children, adults, like, so a really robust kind of group, and they found that our brains can't decide if we like something or don't like it until we've had it about 6 to 7 times. Because it is about like immediate rejection, because we're about protecting this body. I don't know that. Yeah. Get away from me. And the next time we're like a little more open. Mm-hmm. And then it's right in the next couple times where we start to decide like, oh, like, this is for me or it's not for me.
Yeah.
And it is all about trying it in different ways and thinking about different things to have it. Yeah. So.
Well, because I feel like the general like phrase is like, I'll try anything once. And I'm like, that's not enough to know.
No.
At least twice.
I'm because like, you can definitely have your first experience be bad. I mean, so many first experiences.
And then I would never do anything. I would never do anything again or try anything again because I'm like, oh, that's bad. I'm never doing that again. And it's like, it could be the best thing ever. Like, I don't like matcha, but like every so often I'll like make myself a little iced matcha in the morning, and like every time I grow to like it a little more.
Yeah.
And I realize I like strawberry matcha, like I can down a glass of that, but like
like sugar matcha.
I like sugar, period.
Well, I mean, I think matcha is a great example too, because there's like so many different grades and like they taste so different. And I also don't really like the like lower grade matchas that look more gray, but I love how much like grass like and neon green ceremonial grade is, which may make me sound very bougie, but like a lot of things, the bigger investment translates to not needing as much for you to get the full flavor, because other things are cut. So that's another good point, is, you know, trying different ranges. Like I thought I didn't like chocolate up until I was 26, and then I started trying chocolates from around the world. I started working with chocolates, because if you're working at a nice restaurant and they have reps, they'll send you some chocolates. And now I fucking love chocolate.
Up until like
I could have not learned this.
I was the same way, where I didn't like chocolate, and I would go on the internet and literally say I hate chocolate, like, you're never gonna get chocolate recipes. I would say like I hate chocolate except for these ones, and I was like, that's not you hating chocolate. That's you just liking things that
discerning.
Are discerning. Yeah.
And the great thing is it's individual. So what I love, while I think I am a good expert and I've weeded through a lot of terrible, there still leaves at least like a couple hundred choices for you to then find what's perfect for you, which is, I think is what I really love about coming up with flavor combinations. I mean, I don't know if this is true for you, but when you were first starting out, did you feel a little timid about making things too different because maybe someone else wouldn't like it, or were you really good about just doing what you wanted?
I'm very I'm gonna do what I want, and if you like it, that's cool. Not that I don't care, because I care a lot, but it's also like I can't cater to everyone and everyone's individual taste, so I need to keep it tight to what I like. And then if you like it, you like it. But I've always been the person who, like, even at a young age when I was baking in like high school, I would never follow a recipe. I would always be like, you know what these cinnamon rolls need? Some orange zest. And it's not like that's anything crazy and over the top. It was just like one little addition that I was like, I think that could be nice. That's been my evolution. So my approach has always been to like add something that I think would enhance the flavor in some way, which I think is funny because I'm such a big like, you should always follow the recipe to a T the first time at least. But then when I'm in the kitchen doing like making someone else's recipe for the first time, I'm like, why didn't you add cinnamon to this? Like, I'm gonna just do that.
It's
and then,
a very do as I say, not as I do situation.
Yeah, definitely.
But I think that there's a difference of like skill there too. Like if you're a professional, you can kind of, and I don't even mean like because you've worked in places or whatever and you have a great CV, but like if you are baking every single day, then you are gonna start to develop a point where you can look at a recipe and almost taste it in your mouth. At least that's how I feel. And so like I feel like I can confidently change things because I know what they mean. But I think if you're more of a novice or an amateur, it is really useful to get at least a baseline. And then the next time have learned what each thing does and then play with it. And that will sort of get you to the point where you can do as we not do as we say and do as we do.
I think also, like, when I'm testing and when I'm, like, making a new cake batter or a new, like, pastry cream, I have a very, like, savory approach to how I'm testing things, where I'm like, okay, I'll taste the batter as it's raw. I'll taste it again once it's cake, and, like, while it's still raw, like, I can adjust it and, like, add things. And, like, same thing with, like, a pastry cream. Which I know is
probably, like, triggering for some people because they're like, you're never supposed to try a raw thing. As long, I mean, the biggest thing we're concerned about there is our eggs. And if you're buying terrible eggs, then we should go back to ingredient selection as as a big thing of flavor. I think as long as you get good eggs and you're not immunocompromised.
Yeah.
That it's totally fine to taste stuff. And actually, baking can take a lot of adjustments along the way. Mm-hmm. We're just not geared to think about it that way.
Yeah. So that's, like, something that I think would change flavor and the approach to flavor for a lot of people is realizing you can make a vanilla cake and at the last minute decide, oh, what if I threw in some spice here? And know that it's not going to, like, throw the whole thing. But you can also gauge how much you just added and if you need to add more.
Yeah. I mean, you could even add in an egg late stage. Or more sugar.
Yeah.
Or more flour. Mm-hmm. It's just about being gentle and then letting it rest a little because we still want tenderness. And tenderness really comes from not a lot of vegetation or some sort of rest. I mean, we see that in bread too. And so these are, I think there are a lot of principles too that you can borrow. I think you and I also really look for balance when we're thinking about flavors. Like, neither one of us is known for making things too sweet.
Yeah. I think also when it comes to all these, like, when you're reading my Instagram captions that are describing a cake and you're hearing these very potent, strong flavors, you, when you take a bite of that cake, you're not getting 12 distinct flavors. Like, I'm working to have one highlight the other and create its own flavor altogether where you're just like, oh, this is a delicious thing. Not, oh my God, this is, I'm definitely getting olive oil. I'm definitely getting bergamot. You should, but it should kind of also meld together.
Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. You're kind of creating this family of flavors instead. I feel like when I try to create families of flavor, I'm really inspired by different drinks I've had. I think those are really easy to turn into cakes.
Oh, yeah.
Margaritas.
Any.
Not even just alcoholic cocktails, but, like, a lot of them, because you have so few ingredients and all that's going to shine is flavors, I think there's a real similarity there to baking. I also think that I often look to, like, I mean, I use a lot of plants, I use a lot of herbs, but I'll often do things where I'm using the whole thing. So right now I have a cake that's like fig leaf mousse and fig jam. Or when I was working at a restaurant many moons ago now, it was like a lemon sugar cake, a lemon sugar cookie that had some really heavy zest, but then it was rolled in lemon leaves I had scorched and then powdered into the sugar. So that's another one I think of my conceits where I'm like, how can I just eat the entire plant? Because it's one thing, so they're just going to be shades of each other. And so often we have names for food that, like, are different, but they're the same plant. I think of, like, cilantro and coriander. It's the same thing, but because they're different parts, we have whole different names for them. And I think that a lot of people then don't realize.
You can use it all.
Yeah. And it's the same thing. And they're only going to highlight each other, like you said, with these, like, nuances. What about you? Or what are some other, like, inspiration points for flavor combinations?
Well, like, throwing it back to nostalgia, just taking something that I know and I love, like, let's say a Butterfinger bar, and then thinking about, okay, well, there's, like, peanut buttery notes and there's coconutty notes and there's chocolate, and then thinking about flavors that I've come across in my times around the sun, and taking things like fig leaf and making, like, a pastry cream because it kind of hits that coconutty flavor.
Yeah.
And then using something like, you know, tahini or black sesame paste to hit those nutty notes, and then using, like, maybe a really, really nice milk chocolate like Bahibe. And then when you eat that, you're like, oh, I didn't know what black sesame tasted like. I didn't know what fig leaf tasted like. But now that I'm eating it all together,
it all works.
I know exactly what all of this tastes like. And it's taking just everything I've learned, and not even in just, like, the work that and the places I've worked, but we live in a time where the internet is boundless, and, you know, I follow so many just, like, amazing bakers who are also using so many amazing and interesting flavors that when I see them talk about it, I'm like, what? Peach leaf? You mean you can make a tea out of peach leaves and then it's also delicious and fruity, pebbly, and almost like almonds? I want to try that. And
I think, and you make a good point too, like, because the internet is boundless or very global, like, we are seeing people use ingredients that are maybe common to their culture, but we don't use. So, like, a lot of leaf cookery is common in Asia.
Yeah.
And is sort of invading the mainstream flavor combinations as we have more Asian representation mm-hmm. in savory and sweet. I certainly feel like I learn a lot from traveling mm-hmm. and tasting things. And, you know, like, I think it's so funny because cardamom is such an intense spice. But then you have the cardamom bun that has come out as this like king of pastries that mm-hmm. is just this like love light. Affair, mm-hmm. like intense amount of cardamom. Mm-hmm. But if you put it in other things, people are often like, oh, that's too much, you know? And so different cultures fall in love with different things. And just going back to your point, if we're giving advice on how to like do flavor combination, is like trust what you grew up with and mm-hmm. loved.
Yeah,
it's definitely going to go beyond.
Because it works back then borders. And it still works now. So
yeah,
like,
and it's probably going to have a broader audience now because I do think that there's room for all those classic flavors, but people do want to have more exploration in mm-hmm. the same way that we have seen cooking get more adventurous and have seen more fusion and more borrowing. But I love that you brought up Butterfingers because I love Butterfingers. I was never really allowed to eat candy as a kid, which is now why I probably eat so much candy.
That's why there's a jar of jelly beans on the table. Yeah.
And we're snacking on lollipops. But I also feel like because of that, like I do, that is the one of the main reasons why I have a more balanced approach and don't like my sweets to be too sweet unless it's sour candy. But one of the things I loved about Butterfinger, which I think highlights a really important but often forgotten element of flavor combinations, is texture.
Yes.
And then I would also say temperature, because texture contributes so much to how we experience a flavor on our tongue, whether mm-hmm. it's crunchy peanut butter or creamy peanut butter, like the intensity of it. Mm-hmm. So I feel like I don't always have to have something crunchy, but I really love there's something's mm-hmm. crunchy. Are you an always have to have a crunchy element?
I've got horrible teeth, so I prefer something that is very creamy. You know, I lean it toward things like creme brulee, flan, very, very light cakes.
But
with
even
like,
creme brulee's got that nice
it has
little,
like a little texture
like,
to
thin.
It. But I'm like,
it can stay.
I'm like gumming it, you know, because I have three teeth left. When I'm like building cakes, like that's what most of my work has been these past 3 years. I'm never like, oh, let me add like crumble of something or like if there's something like passion fruit seeds in it, like that'll be my little
little crunch.
But that's only because it's through the fruit that I'm adding and it's not really like let me make something crunchy.
Yeah.
Like it never needs it on my end for
me. Yeah. I have only felt the need to really include a lot of crunch in, at least in the cakes, not mm-hmm. in other desserts, when I'm making chocolate, because I think like most of it melts in your mouth in a cake. Mm-hmm. And then if you have a crumble element, you almost have to bite that at the end. Mm-hmm. And then like it's
and
another
it, like,
pop
it. Yeah.
And another like deepening of chocolate. So it's just another interesting way to think about like how is the experience in the mouth? Mm-hmm. What flavor is going to finish?
When I'm thinking crunch, because sometimes I am like, oh, a little like crunchy something would be good in here. I'm also thinking like someone might keep this cake for like 4 days. And by the fourth day, that
it won't
like,
be crunchy.
Is going to be soggy, and I don't like soggy things.
Yeah,
so
soggy's not nice.
That when I'm like, no crunch. Like, I think that a lot when I'm thinking of like, oh, I'm building this cake. Like, someone might be picking this up like 2 days before their party, and by the time they get it, now that crunchy little cookie that I had in there is soggy.
Now, I only ever put the crunch on top because of that reason. Mm. But even
it like stales
out and
if
oxidation,
I like,
totally. But it's a good point. You know, I think that sometimes I eat something, not necessarily just pastries, where I'm like, huh, I get this distinct feeling that whoever made this didn't try a bite.
like hours later.
Didn't think, well, also just didn't think through how I was going to like
eat it
or how it was going to go down in my mouth. So I think that like it's always important, like the final step of tasting is obviously to taste it all together mm-hmm. and make sure that everything is in harmony mm-hmm.
and
that one thing's not blowing everything.
It like 8 hours later. The person I used to work for at Mr. Holmes,
just eat cake
would
all day.
He would like, I would bring him like the tasting tray and he's like, yeah, you can just leave it there. And I was like, I want your feedback now, please. And he would eat it the next day after it sat out on
his
desk.
That's a great test.
And he's like, most of the people who are buying our pastries are buying like a whole box that they're going to eat through the week.
Yeah.
So I need to make sure that this is going to be good for them when they pick it up the next morning and eat it.
Yeah.
And I was like, I guess. Because for me, I'm like, I want everything fresh out of the oven.
Yeah, totally. Like, but like, I mean, like, that's the, not, the baker's like, that's delight. Yeah. Because everything's going to be
that's
warm.
That's my one like perk of waking up at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
is that I get a fresh chocolate croissant out of the oven.
But I think even if you don't wait till the next day, even just waiting 4 hours, like that's
a
lot
big changes.
Aging mm-hmm. right there. And if you got a baked good that can make it to the end of the day, like I feel like you got a
it.
Winner.
Because mm-hmm.
I feel like there's so many things we take out of the oven that are like feel perfect, but then by the time they cool, they're like they're too stiff, they're mm-hmm. rock, they're too dense. And so, you know, in terms of technique, you almost want to take things to at least... For sure, with custards and curds, I take things to 80% on the heat and then
mm-hmm.
I pull it.
Because mm-hmm.
if you go all the way, there's still so much carryover cooking, and that's true for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, having things, you should still look for golden brown. I'm not
yeah.
here for the
no
super platinum blonde, but you should feel a softness.
Mm-hmm.
It should still look a little wobbly,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Because it will. Continue.
It will
like
continue.
Over.
Yeah.
It'll go over.
Yeah. And that cookie so will taste different once it's cooled,
mm-hmm.
which brings me to temperature. And I think that there is a right temperature to enjoy most things and certainly most ingredients. And that can also really change your enjoyment of them and how you combine them.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel like temperature works for you? Do you try things, well, since you said you like them warm, but
like
you...
barely set out of the oven is the only way to eat.
And
the
last
cookie.
Week I pulled
like,
cake straight from the fridge and microwaved it because we needed it now.
I'm like, yeah, my donuts are great, but have you ever had one straight out of the fryer still hot, grease burns on your mouth? But yeah, like I do take bites as soon as they come out of the fryer, the oven, wherever, and then like a little bit later just to make sure, because it could be this like perfect bite when it comes out of the oven, and like you said, like 4 hours later I'm like, oh, this is really dense, because fresh out of the oven is delicious.
It's great. Everything
like
is warm
everything's
lovely.
Warm, everything's soft, like
mm-hmm. gooey.
If that's your basis, like you're not serving everything fresh out of the oven.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you are like serving cookies fresh from the oven, and
well,
it doesn't
I think
matter,
it's a good thing
like,
to think about. Like
yeah.
if you are going to be doing an event where the cookies are coming straight out of the oven, then I might actually flavor them a little lighter because
mm-hmm.
everything is going to be amplified by that heat.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I know if they're going to sit out a lot longer, I'll like amp up the spices or something, you know. In the same way, you know, I think the classic example is ice cream. You know, if you taste your base when it's warm and you're like, oh, that tastes great, chances are when you
cool
freeze
it,
you're going to be like, it's sort of missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to kind of almost double the intensity when it's warm so that you have that experience when it's cold. So I think that's another good way to, if you're trying to create flavor, is think about at what temperature
am I serving this?
Because that's going to affect how someone experiences it. Any other thoughts on flavor combinations? What are your favorite recent discoveries that you're making stuff with?
Recently, I've been very nostalgic. I made peanut butter toffee popcorn because I had some peanut. I'm all about peanut butter today, apparently. I'm not like a peanut butter fiend. I need
I mean,
you guys
I'm here
to
for
not,
any kind of popcorn, so.
Something that, it's not a new discovery, but I've loved bergamot for a while, but it is so hard to find fresh, and it is so expensive when you do find it fresh. And when I was at Berkeley Bowl a few months ago, they had fresh and it was reasonably priced, so I did drive back with like a couple pounds of it, and I've just been playing around with that a lot.
Have you been zesting it and keeping it in the freezer, or are you
yeah.
just keeping it in your fridge?
Juiced and in the freezer and zested.
Nice.
Also just
yeah.
in some sugar for like rolling and
yeah. I think don't be afraid to like do some preservation on some of
yeah.
your favorite ingredients so that you can have them around
like
a little
year long
when you go through the trouble of hunting
yeah.
them down.
And it's like something like bergamot that has such a short season. Or
yeah.
like, you know, it's not something that I can find commercially year round at like Vons.
Yeah.
You know, strawberries, I'm like, oh, I can get that year round. They're not great year round, but they're there.
Yeah. Well, I think those are great. I mean, I feel like I'm still in my yuzu era and really enjoying passion fruit. I can't give it up ever. So I always buy it in bulk in the season and then just freeze it. I also feel like I'm revisiting my love of tonka recently and of those like almondy marzipan flavors and like the condensed milks and things I talked about. So yeah, I mean, I think what I would just want to reiterate is just like, if you're trying to come up with flavor combinations, like don't be afraid to trust what you know and also do a lot of exploring, whether that's research, going to markets,
going to restaurants, things, and only getting all the desserts.
Yes, dessert storm. This is what you will. You will not only thank yourself later, but you will make the pastry chef there so happy. They will be so thrilled to send out all their work as like an art piece. Because I certainly, when I was leading pastry kitchens, like I always considered maybe someone got all of them. And how I wanted, they and how the board. All the points they hit. So it was never like three chocolate things or two berry things, and it was amazing when someone ordered all of them.
What?
So just trust that you'll be making more than just your own day if you get all the desserts. My favorite of all of the like classic canon of like cakes and cookies and stuff is probably a Black Forest cake. Like I went crazy for that as a kid.
Classic.
Very classic. Yeah. It's like cream and cherries and chocolate. And I still to this day look at them and I'm like, oh, that will tank me the same way it did when I was five. But it looks so good still.
I mean, for me, it's princess cake, which is berries and cream basically. Yeah. It's just so good.
The marzipan.
It's so light and that like little almondy from the marzipan. Yeah. Like when we go to Quarter Sheets and there's princess cake left. Yeah. If there's ever any left, you know, it's so hit or miss. Pina colada. It's pina colada for me, baby. That's my go-to.
That's
like,
your go-to?
That's my childhood flavor.
Yeah, I mean, I got
flavor.
A lot of love for chocolate and peanut butter also with a little banana thrown in, just like the king.
I'm like, also, now that we're talking like childhood flavors, I'm just trying to picture like all of my Halloween candy bags. And I was like, what was I grabbing first? And it was Hershey's bars. So I guess I've always been a chocolate lover. I'm just a big fat liar.
I was always really excited about the lemon heads.
Halloween. That like tart hit.
Yeah, I'm always gonna be game for like something with lemon curd or some sort of really like really punchy tart. Thing.
And then throw like a handful of citric acid in. I'm just
or malic acid. So another exploration of sour.
I want your like face to pucker into the back of your skull when you eat something tart.
I don't want you to be permanently disfigured, but I do want you to have a good time.
I'll love you either way.
All right, well, should we do rapid fire since it's only fair we ask of our guests?
I think so.
Cassie, what's your favorite thing to eat right now?
Chorizo from that one place, and I'm already forgetting the name.
Peds and Barnett. Yeah, we love them.
Their chorizo is
great stuff.
I'm now obsessed. I had it the first night. This is not rapid. I'm giving way too much context.
I know. But, my leniency is being really intense right here. Like,
okay, Rose, what's your favorite kitchen utensil?
Oh, that's never going to change for me. It's always a spatula. I can do too much with it. Okay, what ingredient is overrated?
Nutella, still. What are you currently reading?
I am reading a lot of books about expecting a child.
Have we chosen a name? Rapid fire. Tell me the name.
We got a list of names on the wall. We're letting gravity choose right now.
Whichever one, the last one to fall.
The last
the name.
One, the last man standing, it gets it. Best grocery store hot bar.
Whole Foods Forever and Always. Oh, but sometimes Gelson's. It's Bristol Farms. It's Bristol Farms. Your favorite season for produce is?
Probably early summer. I really like can't get enough of stone fruit. I wait all year for the green gage stone fruit. And I also just am really psyched for like the first melons coming out of Wiser Farm. So
I only had my first green gage last year and I wait for them to get like jammy.
Really jammy.
And I bite a hole at the bottom and suck out all the like, it's not pulp, but like the flesh.
I just really love that like they're so small, you can kind of pop the whole thing in your mouth and just kind of spit eat around the seed. Yeah. Like, they're almost like big grapes. I love them. All right. Well, thank you for joining us on Kitchen Tape Podcast.
Once again, I'm Cassie Mandietta.
And I'm Rose Wild.
And as always,
eat cute.
Be cute.
Thank you for joining us this week on Kitchen Tape. Our theme music is created by Dan Crabtree. You can subscribe on Spotify and Apple to be notified when we release new episodes every other Tuesday. If you enjoyed this week's episode, we'd love it if you left us a review. If you'd like to be a guest on a future episode, contact us on social media. You can reach Rose at @TRoseWild and Cassie at @IBakeMistakes or email us at kitchentapepod@gmail.com. Catch you next time on Kitchen Tape Podcast.